call the City of Franklin's Common Council to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Olson.
Here.
Alderman Solomon.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderman Wisconsin.
Here.
Please rise, join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is citizens' comment period. Are there any citizens wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Any citizens wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Are there any citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, I'm going to close the citizens' comment period and turn to item B2. And it'll probably be helpful if I put my glasses on. Announcements. Item 2A is former Franklin Alderman Mary P. Thomas passed away. And the ceremony was held this past Saturday. As for a moment of silence on behalf of Mary Thomas, who put in almost 14 years as an alderman for the city. Thank you very much. I did attend the funeral the other day, and I know some of the family members were thinking about coming down, but they wanted to express their gratitude to the city for the flowers and for the expressions of sympathy that were given. Item B, Franklin Fire Department finalist in IKEA and Family Handyman Magazine's Fire Station Kitchen Makeover Contest. Alderman Skronsky.
What, you mean you guys did all that work by yourself and you got in a picture, huh? Everybody pitched in, all the firefighters?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, we're excited. We've been selected from over 1,000 departments throughout the city, or throughout the country, and we're down to 5 finalists. We don't know who we're competing against, though, so we'll see what happens.
That's pretty good.
Voting will start in February, and I think you're going to see March. So.
Good. And we have to use IKEA products, obviously.
Yeah. I think they'll actually come in and do some of the
design work and everything.
Yeah.
And then you guys are going to do all the work and put it together.
I'm not sure exactly who's doing the work. I think they'll involve some contractors in that. So.
Well, you guys ain't going to stand around and watch. I mean, what the hell?
Probably
you
want
to eat, don't you? Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I asked Adam to put this on the agenda so that all of you would know what's going on, as well as sharing this with the general community. Alderman Olson. Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I think this is great that we're hopefully going to have a makeover in your kitchen. Unfortunately, it's embarrassing that we're going to have somebody do a makeover of our kitchen.
Yeah.
Top 5 1,000 crappiest fire department kitchens. Not a good thing.
Okay, any other comments? Thank you, Chief Remington, for bringing this to our attention.
But again, thanks for the creativity, Chief.
Item C, proclamation, South Suburban Chamber of Commerce finalists, Business of the Year to ESC Services. Number of proclamations, I don't know that go into all of them. Gus's Mexican Cantina was one of the finalists. A number of us were there. I have to say the table for Franklin was completely full, and we were well represented. Sat next to Oak Creek's table, and Gus had nothing but smiles on his face from year to year. So it was a very nice time. The governor came to the ceremony and did a bang-up job, really a great speech. So just wanted to bring this to your attention. Any questions? If not, item C1, approval of regular meeting, January 22nd, 2013.
So
okay. For the correction?
Correction.
Okay. correction was?
Item G3 says the motion by Alderman Olson, which says Alderman Taylor, seconded by Alderman Taylor.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
With the corrections? Any other corrections or adjustments? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. You have item E1A, David Fowler, in front of you for Complete Streets and Connectivity Committee. As you may remember, Dave actually was the chair of that. I asked Dave if he would set some time aside so he could work with me on some potential water issues for Franklin for the future. But that seems to be a little bit far off. So Dave has asked to go back on the Complete Streets, and I'm more than happy to put his name forward.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Olson.
Aye.
Sullivan.
Aye.
Wilhelm.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Skowronski.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. You have the name of Aaron Smack in front of you. I think his application and resume speaks volumes. He's a very
motion
qualified individual.
Second. Motion approved.
As motion approved, it's been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skowronski.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Solomon.
Aye.
Alderman Olson.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Next is a letter, a recommendation from Frank Lepido regarding school security. As you can see, he, like many people, addressed the letter to me because I think there's a lot of people in the communities think that the mayor is in charge of the school districts, which is not the case. I know that Mayor Barrett went through a lot of discussions and because people in the city of Milwaukee thought that he was in charge of the school district. I think, in fact, he said that he wouldn't mind being in charge of the school district. But nonetheless, I wanted to bring this forward. I know Frank from years past, outstanding law enforcement officer. But I wanted to bring this forward because I think that Frank is bringing forward a very good idea. It's an idea that is being shared across the country. I did a little Google search on this, and I'm seeing that many municipalities are turning to former law enforcement officers, at least in a temporary stage, to come in and try and heighten the level of school security. I also talked to Jerry Reeder, recently from the Deputy Sheriff's Association. He's a business agent. Jerry and I go way, way back, and ran the idea and passed him, and Jerry said that there is a movement afoot. Actually, there might be some state legislation pending on this subject, where professional, trained law enforcement officers who are well-skilled and marksmen, who are also trained in public relations and security measures, could play a role in trying to plug the hole for security that now exists across the nation, at least until such time as, you know, gun laws and mental health issues are tackled with. So Frank couldn't be here tonight. He really wanted to be here. But I think it's a great idea. I mean, we also have former law enforcement officers like Mike Martins and many others that might be able to fill a role if that's what the school districts are looking for. Alderman Solomon?
Move to place on file and to send a copy to the school district.
Second. Moved and seconded. Alderman Skowronski?
Yeah, I was surprised because years back the school board did have a trained officer at the high school full-time, and I'm surprised that that never continued. And it was real well, and it went well. And you didn't have those incidents, whether they're small or minor, that were ever that you had to deal with. And since that officer's not there anymore, it's a shame.
Yeah, I know that the fire chief, the police chief brought that up at the when he was giving a report on the status of our police department working with the school district, and recommended that that type of officer be recreated and put back in the schools. I think we're the only school district in the area that does not have such an officer.
Yeah, it's surprising too, because Sean Crowley retired from the police department, and he would really make an impression with the kids. You could tell him if he was a police officer or not. He fit right in with the crowd. Really did an excellent job. He was a credit to the police department. And, it's a shame that the school board was short-sighted and eliminating that that personnel to be there.
Yeah, I normally don't bring up school issues because, I think it's important that we try and work with the various types of municipal governments that are out there and work cooperatively. But I'm charged by statute with trying to secure the safety for all the people in Franklin as well as this common council. So I think it is it's appropriate for us to try and make some recommendations as to how we can improve safety throughout the community. And I'm hoping that another meeting will be set up between the school district and our police chief, because I think the last one was canceled. So, as I said earlier, I think the incident in Connecticut was probably the worst situation that I've ever experienced as an adult, and I hope that there's no repeat of that. So, if there's no other comments or questions, can we take the vote? All those in favor, please signify by... Yes, there was a second. All those in favor, please signify.
What? I'm done.
Did you second the motion?
Yes, I did.
Just checking.
We didn't recognize you with that new shirt. I've got to be for sure.
Yeah. He blends
it's
in.
Very crisp, the arm.
Very does it.
Looks just like the wall over there.
After how many years? 12 years? Now it finally gets a new shirt. Last
yeah.
blends in. It really, this one really blends in. I didn't recognize you over there.
The United Radio's going to your head, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's not more than one topic.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify. Everybody saying aye.
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 Those opposed, I have a motion. Motion passes. It's, that was like being a judge at a tennis match.
I got fun in the next month or so.
Yeah. Reports, recommendations. You have a presentation, item 8. Is that correct, Mr. City Engineer?
Yes.
There's no objection. I'd like to skip to item 8. Mr. Ben.
Could you hit the lights, Joe? I'll try to make this brief, but we've changed a little bit what we're doing for ice control for solving the streets. That's good. Let me go over this because I would like the public to know that we're not putting sand on the streets, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But in 2009, we purchased a brine-making system so we can make brine. It came late in about February, end of February, March in 2009, so we really didn't get to use the salt brine system until 2010. But ever since 2010, we've been making brine, which basically is mixing water with salt. This is the brine mixing tank that's set up in our city garage. It actually fits on an end loader so we can dump it because the rock salt does have some impurities in it. Periodically have to dump it. But it basically mixes water with the salt. And it's important, I don't know if you can read this table, but it's important that we hit the eucalyptic temperature, because you can notice if you look at that far right of the big table, how the freezing temperature keeps going down until it gets to -4 degrees, and then immediately goes back up to 32 degrees if you go to full saturation. So we have Dale Lindman is kind of our brewmaster, and he uses a hydrometer to get the right mix for the salt brine. Then we're using GeoMelt. GeoMelt is a byproduct from the processing of sugar beets into sugar. A lot of people call it beet juice, which it more or less is. And it has an unusual reaction with the salt and reduces its effective temperature down to practically 40 below zero. And it also is kind of a sticky substance, and it holds the salt brine on the pavement, or even the salt that it's coated, but particularly the salt brine. So we have set up some trucks. We have two trucks. One we first set up was just a manual truck that we set the pumps at 23 miles an hour, the speed we would drive, and then we would put out 40 gallons of brine per mile mixed with the GeoMelt. We have tanks. We actually have one more tank than when this picture was taken. This is, and you can see, we actually drizzle it out in stripes. So when you see stripes on the pavement, that means we have pre-wet, what we call pre-wetted the pavement. And what this does, it's sticky enough that it'll stay on the pavement for about 7 days. But we can go out, for instance, if it's going to snow on the weekend, we can go out Friday afternoon and do all this during regular time, and we'll have an effective first hit for the snow early on. And what it does, it breaks us the bond from the snow to the pavement, and much easier to get it off. And in a light snow, well, sometimes itself just take care of the melting. Again, we use 40 gallons per lane mile. This is a more, we have two trucks. This is the truck that has an automatic speed control, so no matter how much we go, how what speed we go, we get 40 gallons per mile. And just a few pictures. But this stays on for a period of time and really helps us with preparing. We do about 40 linear miles of arterial and collector streets, or about 90 lane miles. A little over 90 lane miles. As I mentioned, it breaks the bond of the pavement and serves to melt off the early snow. So this gives us a chance to get an early start on the snow and ice control. And we can do more work during regular hours than overtime hours. In mild weather, from 15 degrees to 20 degrees and up, we use about 10% GeoMelt, and in colder weather, 0 to 15, we'll use about 20%. Again, if the weather is up Hagen in the high 20s and 30s, we would just use a little GeoMelt. This is really what I wanted to show more than anything else tonight. That is salt treated with GeoMelt, and unfortunately, it looks just like sand. And we are starting to spread that now into the subdivisions, particularly in cold weather. So if people call and say, why is the city using sand? It's not sand. It's salt that's coated with GeoMelt. And in cold temperatures, that really cuts through. It's just amazing what that GeoMelt will do in cutting through the snow and ice and melting and starting it. Reaction and either even sub-zero weather. The salt is not very effective at 15 degrees. Pure salt, rock salt, put down at 15 degrees is just not effective at all. You can put calcium chloride with it, and which lowers its melting temperature down, but calcium chloride is extremely aggressive on our equipment, on our personnel. We do have that available, and we do use it occasionally, but this GeoMelt is really a blessing for us. And here we're just loading it into our regular snowplow spreader trucks, and we're going to be out in cold weather and all the subdivisions spreading this salt that's treated with GeoMelt, which has a tendency to look like sand. And I guess we could get something in the newsletter, but very frank with you, by the middle to the end of February, we won't be using this anymore because the weather will warm up.
Hopefully.
So thank you.
Any questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Bennett. We'll return to regular order of business.
If this stuff's all prepared and in those in the bin, it will, if we don't use it, it can be reused, right? I mean, it's not going to, there's no timetable when it has to be put on the.
No, that'll stay literally
attached to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell us to use.
Anything else? Again, thank you, Mr. Bennett. Item G1, concept review for a proposed single-family estate residential development at 9140 South 51st Street. Joe Hazelow and Dawn M. Boland are the applicants. Mr. Deedle, and is I see Joe is here with us tonight. We all know Joe from all of his work in, on behalf of the city over the years. Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Hello.
I asked that this come before you, and the primary reason is I don't believe we have a zoning designation at the moment. Is that correct, like this?
No, one of, yeah, you're correct. One of the options would be to have a zoning district to accommodate this kind of development, and that option is not available to us.
Well, and there was a considerable amount of discussion during the, I don't know, 3 years of talks over the comprehensive master plan, the task force. In fact, I think Alderman Skronsky may have raised the issue about maybe what we should do is we should look, the city should look at the creation of this type of a zoning class in the likelihood that we wanted to implement it. And there are certain areas of Franklin that, my opinion, it would be a good fit. So, that's why it's before you tonight, and that's why it's coming as a concept review. I guess the other thing I wanted to say is that I'm familiar with the area and with that section, and I think many of you are as well. There's some very large, beautiful trees on that site. Makes the whole neighborhood. It's across from Fleming Park, and it's rather beautiful. And anything that we can do to try and preserve that and work with property owners and developers, I think we should. And that's, again, that's why it's in front of you. But Mr. Deedle?
That's a good introduction, good beginning, and that is one of the options that's pointed out in the staff report. Staff did identify a couple other options. On a quick review of all these options, we don't think any of them are going to be perfect. That's one of the reasons why we identified a couple different options. The other one that we took a little bit more time to point out some of the pros and cons, in addition to creating this new zoning district, would be the PDD option. The advantages of creating the new residential zoning district would be it would be able to apply in other parts of the city. If the Common Council liked this idea, it would be something that could be used in this particular location and in other locations in the city as well. That's one of the advantages of that option. The PDD option would be specific to this particular site, and it could be crafted in such a way to address whatever concerns come up during the process. If the neighbors have concerns about how many buildings or how much woods would be left, those things could be inserted into that PDD. So that's one of the options or one of the advantages of that particular option. Disadvantages of the zoning district, the residential zoning district, a number of variances would still be needed. Some of the accessory structures on that property don't meet the size requirements of the UDO. There may be a fence issue and some other things, so those would probably still have to have variances. You probably wouldn't want to insert those in a residential zoning district because, again, those would apply across the board and that may cause problems. So you probably want to keep that residential zoning district as simple as possible and still allow the variance process to proceed wherever necessary. So that would be one of the disadvantages for this particular site for that option. Disadvantages, of course, with the PDD option would be it is a PDD. There would be a lot of education that would be necessary for the neighbors to probably be comfortable with it because the basis of that PDD would be multiple dwelling units. So they may have concerns about what the future would hold for this property and we have to explain all the process. There are a number of other options that we just briefly identified, didn't go into detail, UDO text amendments, changing the definition of guest home, inserting multiple dwelling units in residential districts, which isn't allowed right now. But we had concerns with those as well. So we spent more time identifying the more likely two options. And just like the applicant, we're looking for common council input, see if you guys have a preference or if you want us to do more research.
Well, there's a, there's some urgency to the applicant getting an answer back from the common council as to kind of a thumbs up or thumbs down as to is this something that the council would allow, because the property owners, my understanding, would like to sell, and Joe and his family would also like to have some knowledge if they should proceed here and try and build their dream home, am I saying it right, in Franklin, or maybe they should move on to other pastures. I don't know that Joe and I have always agreed on things, but I think Joe and his family have done incredible things for the city, and I think if he and his family were to stay here, he will continue to do those things for the city. So I'm, as you have might have picked up, I'm kind of pro trying to get something done here. And I also think the city would be a winner if we had a zoning designation, should people from River Hills or other parts of the country want to relocate to our fine city. Alderman Skronsky, Alderman Taylor.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with Joe on the EDC, and again, we did well together on there, and I think there was a lot of discussion. Went through the comprehensive master plan together, and yes, it was brought up, and we did talk about the state areas that would be minimum 5 acres and more. This something of this nature is, I think, very, very popular within our community, because we do have large portions of land that could be put into estate planning and estate type residential homes. And I think we're right for it. It's nice to see that Joe brought this in. And I can appreciate, I know that property very well. And that particular property would be just perfect for something of this nature. Thank you.
Alderman Taylor, Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, I've talked to Joe a number of times in the last few weeks on this property. I've represented the homeowners for the last 5 years. I did pick up the phone and talk to some of the neighbors on 47th Street, and that abut the back, their backyards abut this property. And there was a proposal at some time for this to be a subdivision. You have had roads at dead end that you could have maybe 6-7 homes, I believe, what the number. And if you talk to the neighbors, it's the typical, we like it the way it is. So having one home or maybe two homes on there compared to half a dozen, 7 or whatever, is much more desirable. I understand in reading all the paperwork and talking to Joel that, you know, Sewer Pack has, would have some concerns about doing a subdivision. This house would be less of a concern because it's one property, one home compared to a number of them. I definitely think we have to do something that addresses the entire city, but I know that they're on a kind of a, you know, time crunch, so I don't know what the best route is to accomplish this, but as the alderman of the district, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a less intrusive compared for the homeowners that do abut it. I mean, him and I, Joe and I haven't agreed on everything since I had my 5 years up here, but I respect him a great deal and what he's done for the city, so I don't have a problem with this. I think to find the right solution, that's what I think we're trying to figure out here tonight. Thanks.
Alderman Wilhelm and Alderman Olson, Alderman Solomon.
Well, I think we can all speak about Joe and his credentials, and I think that's the question here. The question is if it's the right thing for the city and the right thing for this property. Personally, I sort of like the idea. I do have some things that I think would, in my mind, need to be worked out and resolved or at least answered. One of the questions I have is, given the amount of the size of the buildings and the replacement of the buildings that are there, and this maybe Mr. Bennett could answer this, I'm wondering about, do private residential homes require stormwater basins if their rooftops are over a certain size.
You have to be over a half acre of impervious surface in addition to what they have now. So I doubt if they would be required to have stormwater.
Okay, but that would be reviewed by you. So then they would have an answer to that up front, because that would be a cost they might want to know about before they get into it. And I understand that he's moving forward with the sewer pack delineation of the area, and that's really good stuff. I guess it was never determined in the write-up from staff if this was legal, if it's a non-conforming legal use, or if permits were ever pulled, or was this done pre-UDO, or what the status was.
We only did a quick review. We couldn't find the original approvals. We did find one variance for an accessory structure and a couple approvals for building expansions. But we don't know which buildings got those approvals, and we didn't find the original approvals.
I think that might be important to know, because, you know, if people are the understanding that they can just go along and put things up without permits, and then that sets it for the future that that's the way it is, then why would even anyone come to the city to pull permits? And Joe's trying to do the right thing by making sure that, so we should probably have an answer on that for all of us up here. So I guess if we do this, will they be connecting to the sewer and water for this? Is that the intention? Or would that be...
We do have sewer and water available to the south. I would think if they build a new house, they probably would require to put on the sewer. If they remodel what they have now, we don't consider sewer available because it's not in the front. They do have water available, but sewer is sure a short distance away.
So that brings me to future, not this particular site. But future, do we do this out in the southwest portion? Does everybody start putting up double homes on lots where we only, right now we have, you have to have a certain amount of road frontage, and, I mean, that puts a whole different twist. But if you leave it to areas that are sewered, that might be a little bit different. Then maybe you wouldn't be opening up as much. Just a thought. I don't know how any of that would work, but I'm just kind of trying to think out loud about ideas on how we would have less problems in the future and be held to people saying, well, they got to do it, why can't I, type of thing. I guess there's the PDD and the R8 PDD option. I think the problem with the PDD is the cost. For them going forward with the cost of a PDD would cost them the same amount as someone like Walmart would pay. And I think if we're going to try to create a zoning district or a certain PDD for this type of double residential, we might want to think about making a more reasonable cost on that application. Other questions I was wondering on was, how could this be sold in the future? And that might be more of a homeowner issue for the Haslows than for the city, but we might want to think about that. And what were the restrictions when trying to sell this two homes when there's, you know, separate lots? And the physical impact, I'm wondering if that's been done. Certainly we think that this is a really good thing for the neighborhood, and it's probably a really good thing for what the mayor says, the large-sized trees and the fact that they like that. But as you know, over my district, I've had many people involved in my district trying to connect the roads that everybody says have to be connected. And one of the things that got pushed down on me very hard was, well, DPW can't turn their snowplows around. And so if this comes into this area and it's permanently left that way and there's no intentions to turn it into a subdivision, we've now created two dead-end stops. Think about what we went through with Marquette for how many years. So maybe if we can't figure out a way to lower the cost on the PD, maybe they would be willing to give the city a small amount of road right away to just to finish off those cul-de-sacs. So that problem wouldn't be there long term in the future. I don't know what type of right of way. I don't, you know, I'm just thinking that I don't want that subdivision to be stuck with what the subdivision over where I am was stuck with for so many years. And I think if my area had to be held to the same standards and it's been pushed so hard, then I'm hoping that everybody's thinking the same thing about this before we go forward. I have just one more thing. I don't know if there's been any environmental hazard report that's a protection for the Haslows. I hope they looked into that. And I'd like to see us find a way to do it, but I do have those questions, and I hope we can come up with a solution that will work for them.
Alderman Olson, Alderman Solomon, Alderman Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While it's fresh in my mind, I look at the site plan. Wildberry Way already has a cul-de-sac in it. I assume it's built to the 60-foot radius, so that really shouldn't be an issue. As it relates to 48th Street, you look at this, there's two houses on either side vacated, give the land to the parties on both sides. We'll fix that problem. It's not a Haslow issue. But, you know, somehow we got to find a way, one of these times, to accommodate somebody who wants to do good in the community. Now, I don't want to talk about Joe. I'd rather talk about his wife and kids. But here's an 11-acre, 11.5-acre parcel, which really, unless you want to bulldoze all those trees, really can't be used for anything else. And here's someone that wants to take what's there now and improve it. Yeah, you want to add a little building. That's fine. But the net of that is an improvement. So I think we ought to, well, you guys ought to work really hard to make this happen really quickly. I personally... You know, I'd look at the development of a zoning classification because, frankly, I think most of us up here have had an issue with mother-in-law residences in our individual districts. I would urge my colleagues in the future to be careful about the size of the lot on which you permit a mother-in-law's suite. But I think we need to do that because society's demanding it. Some of us have taken care of parents or would have liked to have taken care of parents, or Kenny. And you don't really want them in the same house.
Okay, thanks.
So society is going towards this dimension, and frankly, we ought to do what we can to get this happening. And should the zoning classification go through, which I think probably makes the most sense, I think if the Board of Zoning and Building Appeals would listen to what's being discussed tonight, a front yard fence designed for security ought not be more than half a second discussion. So I would urge us to go forward. I think what makes more sense is development of a zoning classification with a very carefully thought out zone, acreage, but let these people spend some money.
Alderman Solomon, Alderman Taylor.
Well, first off, I'm for the project, and I'm really concerned about the timeline to bring forth a new zoning classification in the city. Mr. and Mrs. Hassel would love to move this process forward as quickly as possible because they've got commitments to meet. I guess I would have to ask staff, what is the quickest way to get this done in this particular case and then move a zoning classification forward? Would it be a PDD? You could have that back to us in less than a month.
There probably won't be much difference between the options because they're probably all going to require a public hearing notice, and that's usually the longest step in the process. So the only difference that I could see is if we don't want to reinvent the wheel and we want to look for somebody else's district that we can just cut and paste with appropriate changes. I already looked at our neighboring communities and I couldn't find one. And I Googled generically and I couldn't find anything very good either. So finding one that somebody did that addresses our issues may be a little bit difficult. If we wanted to create it from scratch, that's what staff is here for, we could do that too. I think the public hearing process is the most. And most of those options require Although I would mention that although after that step or concurrently with that step, there'll probably be some variances. So the PDD option would negate the need for most or all of those variances, which could potentially save them some time, depending on the timing of them.
How soon can you get this back to us for the public hearing?
I think as long as nothing big comes up between now and then, the normal review time of 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. I want to look at Pewaukee because a lot of those houses on the lake have cottages with them for their higher.
I checked Waukesha County, but I didn't check individual communities.
Okay.
Well, Joe, you don't need the fence right away, so
well, it's all in
the
house.
Let's fence. I guess whatever it takes, let's make this happen. Okay? That's my comment. I'm going to say it. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Get her done.
Alderman Taylor?
I remember seeing Get Her Done.
Alderman Skronsky, do you have anything?
Yeah, I did after Alderman Taylor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I remember seeing Get Her Done on another project not that long ago. I got criticized for it, so be careful when you say Get Her Done. You know, like I said earlier, you know, this will be less intrusive to the neighbors in regards to the knowing this area as well as I do, in terms of the snow plowing. On 48th Street, there's only one driveway that abuts 48th, so you could just plow the snow to the end and back up, be done with it. On Wildberry, yeah, right, exactly. Well, yeah, that's true. But there is one driveway for a home. We have to definitely give them access, get them access to Hilltop, and then Wildberry. Obviously, one of the end of the court is a property that they're looking at. I think they could agree to just shove a pile up to it or something like that. So I think the plowing issues can be addressed. I mean, we deal with courts, and we know that courts are a nightmare for us in general, because they take the longest period of time. So I think between both, that won't be a big issue. But I would agree to do something as quickly as possible. I think having its own zoning classification is the best way, but that may take more time than we're looking at. So,
Alderman Skronsky and Alderman Wilhelm.
Yeah, I think the estate classification would be the more appropriate way to go on this thing and to move on it. Because then again, it gives you a start for future any other people that want to do things in this community that may have similar situations. And that's all I got to say. The stump roads can stay just as they are. They're not going to be enhancing them or anything. There's a lot of stump roads in this community. So I think the estate is the better, much better way to go with it.
Alderman Wilhelm?
Mayor, I'm just having a little bit of a problem with the issue on the turnaround time with staff. As you know, back in June, many citizens in the 3rd and 5th District requested quarry monitoring to be put in place. I've been waiting for planning staff to bring that forward for quite some time. It was sent to Mark Liberta, who then sent it to Joel. Now, I'm not talking about making one family happy here. I'm talking about an obligation that staff has to hundreds of residents. And so I guess I'm going to request that if we're going to push this forward for one particular project, which is a benefit to the city, I'm not saying that I would hope that the same standards would hold true on the quarry issue. Joel has that on his books already, and now we're saying, hey, make this happen. It's going to be 3 weeks. And then these citizens have been waiting since June.
As city attorney?
Only that I had a question for Joel on the timing, but I'll also say that this is not personal. It's got nothing to do with the quarry. And number three, I think Mr. Deedle is referring to 3 weeks or more, 4 weeks maybe, to bring the draft you have two buildings on one property, and where might this occur in the city, et cetera. But I thought the easiest answer is doing a new estate-style zoning, which would allow for this. In the real world, publications go out Thursday. The public hearing goes for that. Get a draft ordinance for estate-style or PDD to the court for public inspection next Thursday, and then it goes to the first plan commission March, and second plan commission in March, maybe, and then to the council.
Just on
unless
the.
Unless you want it back, so that's the question also. If you want to see it first, either it's likely going to be a new zoning district or a PDD.
Just on the comments about the individual, just so you understand where I'm coming from. We had, I wasn't around at the time, but we had subdivisions that were proposed. Alderman Taylor, I believe, represents River Terrace Estates, and Alderman Solomon represents Wyndham Hills and Stonehenge. Large reason for that, those subdivisions, was to try and build homes that where CEOs of corporations that would be in our business park could locate. And why did we do that? Because it was in the long-term best interest of the city. I put Mr. Hazelow in that category, along with his family. I've also had, when we're trying to bring businesses to City of Franklin, had some concerns by some of the top people in management that there's no designation for the types of homes that they want to build in our city, so therefore they may not want to come to our city. So I, this is, while I know Joe and I respect him, I also respect what he brings and has brought to the city and what I know he will continue to bring to the city as well as his wife. So that's the comments. So not personal, it's actually business driven, and it's in the best interest of the city. Alderman Wilman.
I would be saying this if it was this person or any other person, Mayor. I just, we're talking about long-term best interest of the city, and I'm only asking that that item will be on the agenda later on in Joel's report. And I do have a concern that, you know, if we don't have time to take on a previous commitment to the citizens, then we shouldn't be making promises if we can't fulfill them. And I'm like, are we just saying now we're going to drop a previous commitment and work on just this, or I guess I'll find out when the other item comes up on the agenda where exactly we're going with the item that's been out here since June, because that also, like I said, is a long-term best interest.
The council members, they don't report to me. I don't report to them. We all report to the people that we represent, and they are entitled to their opinion. And if they believe that they want to have it get her done, they definitely have the ability to say that. I have no powers to try and stop the alderman from saying what they want to say. But you know, there is a workload. There are things that need to be done. So I understand what you're saying.
Outstanding issues.
All right. Anything further, Mr. Hassel? Have you achieved what you needed to hear, or if you're, do you want to?
Yes, if I might mention a couple of things that
sure.
came up.
So if you could you please state your name and address for the record?
Joe Hazlow, 9864 South 35th Street in Franklin. So first off, thank you for recognizing that we're not a developer, we're a family. So it's Joe and Dawn and Kendra and Alex. That's us. We're not a subdivision developer, though my wife's done real estate development in her past. So the recognition of that and Alderman Wilhelm's recognition of the fact that a PDD can be somewhat burdensome in its cost, I greatly appreciate, because it can be. In terms of the comments on sewer hookup in the area near Cardinal Heights, to the degree that we're going to be putting up a structure with a pool, it would make sense for us to do a sewer and water hookup at that time. And we'd probably extend that to whatever is the main house at that time. It simply makes sense. The property today has well, and it has three septics. One of the septics serves what is today the pole barn. It's a 46 by 60 foot structure. It is big. I would encourage you to consider large structures like this on any estate planning type zoning that you do. If you were to go and drive around, for example, in the municipalities that we looked at as alternative places to live, you will see multi-car garages that are massive. You will see all sorts of other very interesting things. Architecturally nice, somewhat expensive to build, to be truthful, but when somebody wants to have 8 cars in a garage because they collect the darn things, it takes a lot of space, and they do what they do. Ours happens to be an existing structure, but I will be honest, if you look at what we put in as a concept for the structure that would house our pool and potentially an indoor basketball court and a couple changing rooms for that structure, it'll be large physically, just because it takes a lot of space, and you need separate air exchange and other things like that. No one wants to be breathing chlorinated air, all that good stuff. So there's lots of stuff to it. Tends to add up in dollars. If you do the mathematics on it, it's a bummer, but it's a lifestyle choice. So just a couple things to mention. In terms of the comment on 49th Street, which is to the north that abuts the property and comes down at Stubbs, what we had wanted to do is to make a walking path up to that area so that our kids could walk to the bus stop on 49th at Hilltop. That's important to us. We don't want our kids walking down a 450-foot driveway to 51st, nor do we want the schools to have a separate driveway bus stop there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And from the standpoint of the drive, though we would normally drive our kids down to the end, I just wanted to make that a point to you guys that the pathway is something that we would probably do pretty soon. We buy the property, we put the pathway through. We're not looking for any sort of man-made materials, though. We don't want to put down a disability access path. That's not what it's about. Leaves, maybe a little bit of aggregate if it's softer ground, but that's it. It's not about intruding. So we're trying to keep it nice. From the standpoint of the natural components, as Alderman Wilhelm mentioned, we are going to have a field delineation study done. I will take a look into the hazardous validation. Thank you for that. I hadn't really thought of it because I did walk the property, and there was nothing that appeared hazardous. But this was a farm once upon a time. The structures are 60-plus years old. Who knows, there could have been, fuel oil out there at one point, and we just got to figure that out. It doesn't look like it, but Lord knows. The other thing about the property that's interesting, it does slope downward to the west. So for those of you that were thinking about, different possibilities for it, when we looked at it, the best options are for something that's westerly facing, like it is today. But we do not know the quality of the structures as they exist. When we're buying this, the existing landowners would like us to continue using it like a family estate. So part of what's also important to us and would be for others that we've talked to who are looking for something similar, we do want green space. We do want buffer. We do want to preserve natural qualities. Many of the people who, Mayor Taylor, you're talking about, that I know who are looking for this sort of property are looking for those qualities. And in the process, they have a tendency to as we would overinvest. So if we can make use of the existing structures, we will for a period of time. We don't want to rip them down, and we want to be sure that that guest house, if it's legally conforming, can be used. So thank you for that. That was a question that you asked, are the buildings conforming? We need to know if one of them has to be raised now or if we can continue to use them. But secondarily and more importantly for our family, my dad and my stepmom love the existing house, okay? We want this to be multi-generational. I did mention it to one of the aldermen here. It's a little different, but it is an issue that comes up for people. It's not as though we ever want to sell this and separate the property. That's not in our plan. It would get sold as a contiguous estate, and someone who buys it would be wanting to have a main dwelling in either a caretaker, caregiver, or mother-in-law dwelling, however you want to put it. In my case, it's father and stepmom house because there's no way that my dad would ever live inside the same house as me, as much as he loves me. Don't get me wrong, I think I'm fabulous to live with. Dad loves me, but he's a very independent guy. And Dawn and I did care for her father for several years inside of our home. He was a stroke victim, he was very disabled, and we cared for him. Different circumstance, different people. And what I would tell you is for those who are fortunate, like we are, who can do this, and you talk to them, there's a reason why they end up in River Hills with lot sizes that are 5-plus with lots of wood or 20 or whatever, and they have multiple dwellings. They do have that up there, though it's really kind of strange the way that the village handles it. So you're doing your research, what you'll find is they tend to allow a great deal and write down less than I would anticipate. And I don't know that that's in policymaking structure that Franklin follows. Normally, Franklin writes more down. So, just my experience.
You said that very nicely.
I don't think I can comment much more. I greatly appreciate the support, though. I know that Dawn does, too, and the kids are excited about moving. They want to get there and host a summer splash and slide party, which is what we're really known for. We are fortunate enough to have very large water slides. We invite 30, 40 kids over. They slide all day, and the parents go to bed exhausted. It's good times for everybody under the age of 12, and parents if they have enough antifreeze. So,
well, it says the concept we've used is for you to, as an applicant, to have give and take and take away from whether you want to proceed on your development proposals. So I think that's been accomplished. Right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. See, number two, update on Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, lithium in groundwater public health assessment. Mr. Worker, there's been much that's been in print. I will tell you that Eric Nitschke called me personally twice regarding the subject matter to let me know that things were going to be released. Mr. Worker and I have been in contact and communication over this since it first came out. So that, and we're trying to deal with a new subject matter. I don't believe the Department of Natural Resources was able to pinpoint the source. They instead included a large area where they said that there should be some testing. So with that, Mr. Worker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Common Council. My purpose tonight is to give a very brief update on the DNR molybdenum issue in groundwater, their public health assessment, which they recently released. My intent is for you to consider my recommendation, receive this report, and file it. As you know, within the past 2 weeks, a two-year environmental study was released by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. It statutorily is responsible for the regulation of groundwater. There was no sample from any private well in the city of Franklin during or as part of that a report that was recently released by the Department of Natural Resources. Molybdenum is a naturally occurring metal. It's number 42 on the periodic table, if you want to check that out later. And it naturally appears in the Earth's crust. There is an established Wisconsin health-based groundwater standard of 40 micrograms or 40 parts per billion, and that is consistent with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency standard for lifetime health advisory levels. Ultimately, the report that was released after 2 years of study by the DNR was inconclusive. In other words, there was no point source identified, nor was there a limit, a number that they could agree upon as to parts per billion that were present in the groundwater sample, in their small sample. Nonetheless, they recommend that homeowners voluntarily test their groundwater for molybdenum. They routinely request that all homeowners annually test their wells for bacteria and for nitrates. So we're in a situation where voluntary molybdenum testing is being recommended. It's relatively inexpensive. Use the state lab of hygiene, $13. Use a private lab like SNF Analytics, $45. The individual homeowner pays this, and they get a result back from the laboratory. The report released did not include any Franklin residents. There are almost 3,000 private wells in the city of Franklin. That's a significant undertaking. Since I learned how to pronounce molybdenum and spell it, although I was aware of the study, we've been distributing test kits to residents. We've distributed over 70 already, and we're providing information for all callers and we're meeting the current additional caseload associated with this project. The DNR is very happy with what we're doing. In fact, when you think about their sample study being 153 wells over 2 years, and we've given 70 samples in 2 weeks, they should be happy with the response by the local public health department, because we're working diligently with them to identify actual levels and potential sources of molybdenum, which normally is not in groundwater. It may be 1, 2, or 3 parts per billion, but normally it is not. It's naturally occurring. It's an essential nutrient. We normally don't see it in groundwater. So in working with Mr. Liberta, Mr. Bennett, with the gentlemen in GIS who have been marvelous, we've come up with a plan to continue doing what we're doing. That would be my recommendation. If, in your wisdom, you would like me to try and work with all 3,000 private well owners and offer them a free test kit, I could do that. I could construct that project and initiate it. If you would like a sampling of a smaller number, which the DNR is not recommending, we could do that too. But in essence, I think what we're doing is a reasonable and measured public health response to the current molybdenum issue. I'd like you to consider my recommendation, receive this report, and file it.
Alderman Skrotsky?
Yeah. Bill, on the request for those test kits, do you have an area that it's more significant in or not, or is it pretty random throughout the city where there are wells, obviously?
I would say geographically, of the 13,000 residents, 10,000 roughly are on municipal water. So those 3,000 are, would you say, eastern, western, and southern areas, but in between, too. Jack's been my go-to guy in the map.
Spread all over.
Okay, so they're not in pretty much located like in my district or anything like that.
No.
They could be in
they're all
Steve's district.
Generally, the subdivisions that don't have curb and gutter.
Security acres, stuff like that.
Security acres.
Yeah, some of the other
ones. I've taken a professional interest in this topic, and of the 70 well sampled kits that I've given out, I'd say I've given 50 of them to residents, and I asked them where they live. We have a very nice representative sampling going on here.
Scattered all around.
All around.
You think in the process of the safety and protection of the citizens that are on those wells, that the city should be a little more aggressive and support those test kits? And when you say giving them to them or paying for the fee from the state to assure that there is much more significant proof that there may not be by helping them out with the $13.50 that the city would pay for.
No one has complained about $13. I don't think it's necessary to pay for it at this time.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the DNR to pay for it. They declined.
Well, they declined everything. There's a lot of things. That's a long list for them.
But if an individual were to do the annual bacteria test on their wells, that would be $27.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, you could spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to test for ever and anything under the water.
Yeah.
But $13 for molybdenum is a reasonable expense.
Is that, would that molybdenum be part of their standard water test?
No.
No, it's not. Is there a reason that professionally you would think why wouldn't it be, or they just say they don't worry about that one at that time?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I can certainly try and find out, but as a special metal that normally doesn't appear in groundwater, to find it requires further assessment.
Got to really look hard, huh? So, it's, and that particular metal that is found in ground, is it more in an industrial area, agricultural area, residential area, is it all over the place?
Part of the answer is it's naturally occurring, oh. And it's part of the normal life cycle. Green plants need it for leaf growth.
Okay.
And we need it as a micronutrient. But what the DNR is, I believe, trying to ascertain is, if is this an element from industrial waste? and coal ash has been pointed to in the original study, but the results of the study were inconclusive to say it was coal ash.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Worker, you're giving a recommendation, but you're also giving three options.
Yes.
For the alderman to consider. And I thought you said that if they don't like your first recommendation, you are prepared to handle the testing for the $3,000.
Yes, if that's the recommendation tonight, or that's the recommendation in a month or in 6 months.
Well, you know, do you feel it would be appropriate time to maybe take option two on the underwriting of those test kits?
For the record, Alderman Taylor just stepped away for a moment. Go ahead, Alderman Skrasky.
Mr. Worker.
No, I'm actually professionally comfortable with what we are currently doing. It's exactly what the Central Racine County Health Departments are doing, which is Caledonia, mm-hmm. Raymond. It's exactly what Western Racine County is doing, which is the townships of Muskego and South. They're hoping initially now that the DNR has made a public statement of a report to see what the initial response is by citizens in sampling their wells voluntarily. I mean, if we went back and said, well, let's do a representative sampling of 20% or 25%, I think I would come back to you and say, for those individuals who did do it initially for $13, we should consider reimbursing them, making them part of the original project. But for now, with 70 results pending, which is 45% of the DNR's two-year plan, I'm professionally, I think number one is the right way to go today, but I'll certainly keep you posted on any updates from the DNR.
Well, do you think then, until you get those results back, we should just leave it up to your discretion for you to come back and give us a report, and then we can make a decision at that time?
I think if there are current developments, I'll certainly be back.
Okay. I think I'd like to make a motion to that effect.
What is the motion?
Motion is to, until the results come back to Mr. Worker, to see if there's any concern regarding citizens of Franklin on these particular wells, that we hold off for his report and then make a decision at that time if there's any concern that we may have to support and pay for the test kits.
Is there a second to the motion?
Is that option one? Or is that...
Yeah, I guess I would take option one.
Let me see if there's a second to the motion. Is there a second to the motion? There is not. The motion fails for lack of a second. And for the record, Alderman Taylor has returned. Alderman Olson, Solomon, Wilhelm.
Thank you for the report, Bill. Based on what you sent us, what was it, last week?
Yes.
The email you sent us last week. It appeared to me, looking at the map that you provided us, there was no instance of higher lithium.
Very good.
That metal stuff, there was no tested result of a high level anywhere near the city of Franklin.
Correct. 7 Mile Road, I believe, was what the journal said that was showing.
So I think what you're doing now is operating with an abundance of caution. And I think that's appropriate. I think you're probably doing too much at this point, because the chances of us having anybody ringing the bell on this are slim or slimmer or none. So if Alderman Skronsky wants to remake his motion as option one, we have to support it. By the way, do you all know what DNR stands for? Don't need a reason. So anyway, sorry, Clark.
Parks. It's one of them things. Alderman Solomon, Alderman Wilhelm.
My point is that we should just accept the report, place it on file, and request that Mr. Worker bring us any updates that he obtains from the 70 test kits that he has out there right now.
Second motion. It's been seconded. Under discussion, Alderman Wilhelm, you did have your hand up. Alderman Schmidt.
This ENR, is there any record of outbreak of this Borderline that in some parts of the country where it caused severe health hazard or something, or is it just a caution here on the elevated level that it has the potential to cause something of health hazard?
The DNR did report on another sampling in northern Wisconsin of 2,700 wells. And in those wells, 95% of them were less than 7 parts per billion or 7 micrograms per liter. And yet one of those wells triggered a 1,400 parts per billion. The potential health effects, not well studied in human beings, but in animals, would suggest the possibility of a digestive kidney or possibly gout-like symptoms with doses that are excessive than what normally we'd find in our diet, because it's in green leafy vegetables, legumes, grains, meat. It's in multiple vitamins that you're taking.
And, reports of the people who pick up the test kits, they're submitting theirs to the state.
Yes.
Are you necessarily getting the reports back from them then, or is it up to the individuals for you to receive the feedback on what the test results show?
It would be voluntary for the individual to share the results with me. And I did ask this question of the State Lab of Hygiene, the laboratory, relative to the release of the data to the DNR. And the understanding was the DNR would want to know the results of these individual voluntary samples.
Anything else? We have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, 6 ayes, no noes. Ayes have the motion carried.
Thank you,
Mr. Worker. And you keep me abreast of anything new. So.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Item 3, Fire Chief, clinical affiliation agreement with Gateway Technical College.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, just signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Good job. Opposed?
Nice job, Adam. Beautiful presentation.
Ayes have it. Motion carries. Good job, Chief. Item 4, amendment to the tax incremental district number 3 project plan to expand the district 1/2 mile to the north and to include the estimated costs of the 27th Street streetscape costs, West College Avenue to West Drexel Avenue, and a contract to engage Ehlers and Associates for assistance through the TIF amendment process. And we have with us tonight the Dean of TIFs, the wizard of Wall Street, Michael Harrigan is with us tonight. I haven't seen you in a while, so good to see you. And Mr. Cal Patterson, did you want to make the presentation?
The item before you originated from the May 1st council action. Went through the CDA. The CDA in their January 17th meeting was recommending that we do amend TIF 3 project plan and that we do get outside assistance to do that. That would be through a contract with Ehlers and Associates. The primary reasons for amending the TIF district are two. One, our original project plan said that if our spending was going to go higher than 15% over the estimates in the project plan, that we'd go back to the Joint Review Board. We're at 12% now. If we just do the portion of the road between Drexel and Rosin, that would put us at 24%. If we extend it north, that would take it all the way up to 35%. So we have to go back and to amend our cost numbers to the Joint Review Board. And if we want to consider any of the cost north of Rosin, we would have to amend the project plan. So it's those two basic items. Hope I didn't steal all your thunder, Mike.
I have a question for you. The the main reason that the Community Development Authority took this issue up was because of the action by the Franklin Common Council on May 1st of 2012. It was actually by a motion made by Alderman Solomon, and then that directed the CDA, or as it say, and further that the CDA take jurisdiction and approves and recommend cost sharing of 50-50. So that's why the CDA took it up. It was not that the Common Council was giving the CDA direction to take over 27th Street or to make a blight determination, but to take this up, study it, and then return with a recommendation. So
that's correct.
Mr. Harrigan?
Thank you, Mayor. So our proposal here this evening is set forth in a way that is accomplished in phases. The plan here would be for us to initiate a review of feasibility to make sure that your objectives, specifically the inclusion of these costs, can be met under the statute, and also to ascertain whether the cash flows as projected based on the costs are going to be adequate to meet the debt or the investment that you're planning to make here associated with the program. We would intend to render a written report to the staff and to the council following our feasibility analysis. If we have any other recommendations associated with that, for example, if we get into it and we find that if for any reason other than an amendment just to modify the project plan to allow for the additional costs, we're really doing it in two ways. We're invoking a provision that occurred with the law change in 2004, which I know that the city was also very helpful in sponsoring within the state legislature, to allow for the addition of a territory within a half a mile of an existing tax increment district to allow for the ability to make expenditures within that area without having to amend the district itself. This is one provision we'd be looking to invoke here. The other thing that could occur if we looked at it, we could come back and say you could amend the boundary of the district, which you get four opportunities to do too. But until we get into that, we won't know for sure which way that would. We think just the amendment of the project plan itself. So if you take a look at the feasibility report, you could come back and say we don't need to go any further. We'll end our engagement at that point. But if you decide that the recommendations that we make are have merit, we would then be looking for your authorization to proceed with the next phase of the report, the process, which is the plan amendment itself and the public participation element of that plan. You have the cost that we've identified. These are pretty set for us, given the type of work that this is. The all-in expense would be not to exceed $13,000 for our services if you choose to go through all the phases and execute the thing in full. I'm happy to answer questions from anyone at this point.
Alderman Wilhelm and then Alderman Olson.
Well, I noticed that the letter on item G3 is the same exact letter as in item G4, of the one that was from Mr. Harrigan.
Yes.
But they have different dates on them, but they're word for word. And my question, I had called Mr. Liberta yesterday asking where is the support for the motion, where the motion says that suggesting modifying the TIF District 3 to include the 27th Streetscapes costs and West College Avenue. When Mr. Patterson called me back today, I wasn't able to get his phone call, but his message said there was some kind of concern about 4, which I guess my question got kind of mixed up in the translations. But my question, since I could not get a clarification, would you for the record address how you're seeing TIF District 3 fit into this, because this is what the motion is asking us. A motion to direct staff to take the necessary action so that TIF District 3 is amended to include the 27th Street streetscape cost from West College to West Drexel, which of course is all of the district that I represent. But when I read your January 23rd letter, which maybe somehow got to be the wrong letter, I don't know, there's nothing in reference on putting 3 in. In fact, it sort of almost says the opposite. Clearly it says the opposite for number 4, but there's also nothing supporting 3. Yeah. So for the record, could you address that?
Well, I'd be happy to. First of all, the letter was a letter of transmittal, and we transmitted our proposal for tax increment district number 3 and talked about the phasing that I just described here this evening. And then we were asked to, and perhaps we should have put these in separate letters, but we were asked to also comment on the tax increment district number 4 modification and additional costs further south on 27th Street. So that's why we had that paragraph in.
4 is really clear. I mean, but 3 is not.
Going back to 3, if your question, Alderman, is what's the support for, what's the justification for the need for, in essence, the amendment of tax increment district number 3, we completely concur based on the review we've done to date with the statements that were made by your finance director, Mr. Patterson here. You right now are already over the expenditure level that was authorized in the 2005 project plan document. You had language in that project plan that allowed you some flexibility there to exceed the project costs to a point. And that point was not to exceed 115% of the original estimated costs in the plan. If you were going to want to exceed 115%, then clearly in the plan, and I have the reference to that here, this is I'm reading directly from the project plan document. It says, the city reserves the right to increase these costs to reflect inflationary increases and other uncontrollable circumstances between 2005 and the time of construction. However, for increases in excess of 15% of total project costs, the city would pursue an amendment to the plan in accordance with the amended procedures specified in Section 6611054H of the Wisconsin statutes, which includes a review by the Drug Review Board. So I think that's where you are. My understanding is that the costs are such, Cal, that this will put you over 115% of your implement.
That is correct.
So that's number one. Number two is that these are street improvements, and the tax increment district boundaries did not include the territory all the way to the north to include that whole strip up to College Avenue. And so if it is your desire to include those costs, it would be also necessary to do so through an amendment of land to indicate that would be your intention. So those two reasons are really the justification for why you would want to think about doing this kind of amendment at this time.
Okay, and then the last part is I'm trying to see where the revenue would come, given that that area is almost completely built, which is a lot different than going to the south. Have you had any preliminary look at that?
That's part of the analysis that we'll be looking at, too. I mean, I can't answer that question tonight because we have seen, and I did get a chance to look at Cal's projection for the tax increment district to date, but we have not done any diligence with that ourselves, and that's part of what I guess we'll be engaging in.
And that I appreciate that it was broken down into 4 parts, so that would be included in the first part from what I'm reading in your...
Yeah, I mean, if you can't do... If you can't pay for it, there's no point in going any further.
Thank you for clarification.
You're welcome.
Alderman Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things. First of all, Alderman Wilhelm brings up the heartburn that I see with this whole project. I see very little revenue potential increment coming from anything north of Boston Avenue. That ship has kind of sailed for us. So that portion of the report, Mike Ehlers from Harrigan and Associates, I think is very important. You and I joke about this. But that's huge for me. I see no revenue projections here that make me comfortable. Also, Mr. Mayor, I have a concern about the costs listed on the spreadsheet. Cal, maybe you can tell me, $977,000 and change. The last spreadsheet that I had that's referenced in the motion was, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I may be wrong, but was $1,000,003 for streetscape elements and roadway improvements.
The top portion of that panel is the 2011 costs, which College to Rawson, $1,003,000, Drexel Rawson's $1,005,000. So the...
All right, let me solve it this way.
The bottom panel just extrapolated the 2011.
Check the numbers because I think you're missing streetscape elements. So if you would. Then, Mr. Mayor, as it relates to the two motions, I think the first motion to direct staff, I think that's premature. I think until Mr. Harrigan said it right. Until Mr. Harrigan does his business and fills out a report that tells us it's feasible, I don't see any need to move forward with telling staff to move forward with expanding a TIF district that may not be feasible. And if we can't do it with properties between Rawson Avenue and Drexel, I don't see any way to make money. So I'll let y'all in the district make it, but then the only motion I'd make would be the second.
Just so I'm clear, what you're saying is, if I heard you right, is let Mr. Harrigan, if the council approves a contract with him, so let him do his feasibility study. And then, before staff makes any changes to anything, you want a report back from Mr. Harrigan that's going to tell us whether this is a good idea or not.
Exactly.
And I think I concur with that. I would like to remind the council of why we're here in some history, and that's that we did meet with our partners in Oak Creek, and I believe we had members of both the CDA and the Board Franklin Committee, as well as staff members. What we were able to come up with was an agreement that Oak Creek would pay for half the cost for the streetscape, basically on their side, and half on our side. And then there was a recommendation to bury the underground wires in that Oak Creek offered to pay for 10% of the share of that, and we would pick up the 90%. And I think everyone was pretty much in concurrence. I can't remember any difference of opinion on this, that if you're going to do this and you're going to do it right, then you need to bury those overhead cables. So then it came back to the council, and the council had before them, how do you want to pay for this? If you agree with Oak Creek to that agreement, okay, so what's the mechanism for paying for it? And then a motion was made, and it was decided to send it back to the CDA to see if TIFs could, in essence, pay for the infrastructure improvements versus going to capital funds or going to other funds within the city. So that's why it's here. And I would agree with Alderman Olson that we've known Mike for years, and he is the maybe you can go to any municipality, he is the resident expert on TIF districts, former city administrator too, right?
Yep.
And so why wouldn't we want to send it to Ehlers and to Mike Harrigan to study and to come back with a feasibility study to let us know if this is really warranted? And then at that point, this common council can decide, right, do we want to continue on the 27th Street Corridor project? Let's say it's not feasible to do it using TIF funds. Then does this council want to use existing funds, borrow for funds, or simply go to our partners on the other side of the street and say, sorry, we're not interested? But one way or the other, I think we need to get back to our partners in Oak Creek and give them a commitment and an answer.
Okay.
Alderman Wilson.
Exactly, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Because this is a partnership. But what I'd hope that the staff and the CDA would ask Ehlers and Associates to do is take a close look at the developable acreage of that vested ground and find out what it's going to take. And you're going to have to work with the planning staff, I'm sure. We've done this all before. And this is the way it's done. You do the plan first, then decide if it's feasible, then go for it. And it's, you know, in the past, we've set pretty high value per acre requirements as we made a decision for a TIF. So, you know, let's do this right. I'm sure we will. I don't say that in a negative way. You know, I look at some of the properties that are drawn out here and I'm saying, I think we should take a closer look at that before you cast that stone. And that's probably a good thing, Mr. Harrigan. It's your fault for having a name like that.
Alderman Solomon, did you have your hand up?
Yes. Okay. The reason Steve and I had talked about this before that meeting where he and I both moved to move this process forward, we felt that too many increments were being missed. I mean, we've missed the GFS, we've missed a restaurant, we've missed Walmart upgrade, we've missed the dental clinic. This is, you know, we wouldn't have brought this forth back in May. It still wouldn't be here.
Yep.
Enough said. Just boggles my mind, Mr. Mayor.
Well, just for the sake of history, I can remember having Mayor Bolander on that microphone. Discussing the subject matter. Alderman Wilhelm?
I guess I'm looking for a time frame for this feasibility study. Approximately how long?
Well, given the discussion here and the specific desire to have us look at the parcels, I will want to have a discussion with suggestible finance. Understand the lay of the land here and the parcels that could be available. Maybe get some collective judgment on what realistic potential is for each of these parcels. So I would like to say that you would have something back as soon as 30 days, 60.
The reason why I'm asking is because it also talks about a May 15th deadline for the Department of Revenue. And if we decide to move forward and we miss that, we will be looking at next May. Do you feel like we have enough time to have your report back and still make that May 15th deadline? Okay. I just want to make sure of that. So I'll move to approve a contract with Ehlers and Associates to guide the city and CDA through the TIF amendment process for TIF District 3 with report back to the council after Phase 1, the feasibility phase, in the amount of $4,300.
Second. So moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Alderman Olson.
I think the dollar amount is too small. I think it's $14,300.
For that one phase, though.
First phase. You can do it one or two ways. You can approve the contract, but either way, we don't go to the next phase until the approval is to do so. So the contract's total is 13 plus $1,500. And the first phase is $4,000.
I understand what all is going on. I'm comfortable with that, except I think we've asked Mr. Harrigan to do a little bit extra work, so I would suggest him not to exceed some other amount. With the money coming from the
I just make a suggestion. It might be easier just to you send the motion, and second, and make a new motion if you want to bring it to a higher figure.
I guess
so
I'll,
clear.
Well, it seems to me he's laid this out pretty well. There might be a little bit extra, but I'll bump it up to 6,000. We should be able to back to exceed 6,000 with money coming from the town.
And who was the second in the motion?
I'm okay with that.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
Roll call, Mr.
Mayor. There's a request for a roll call vote. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Olson.
Aye.
Sullivan.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Scranton.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. I'll turn to the next item, Mr. Patterson.
Next item is just a confirmation because in the May 1st action, it was linked that plans are in place for continuing the TIF from West Drexel to South County Line Road. The TIF 3 doesn't get started until plans are in place for those. So we're just coming back to you and laying out the reasons because of the timeline of the construction and the deadlines for the TIF districts where it's probably not appropriate at this time to look at TIF 4 and expanding 27th Street into that TIF district because it's probably not going to take place until that TIF district is complete and liquidated.
Alderman Taylor?
Your Honor, I'll make a motion to receive and place this. I have G5 on file, but I don't think we need to make a motion to do anything. I don't think we have anything we actually want to accomplish.
Okay, there's a motion to place on file. Is there a second?
Second.
Second on discussion, Alderman Olson.
Well, the big concern I have over this is that we encounter activities similar to what we have north of Russin Avenue, where we get a whole bunch of development. The costs are on the horizon, but we don't have any method to move to establish either new TIF boundaries or new TIF to capture the increment that may be coming down the pipe. So at some point, somebody's got to take responsibility, and it's not going to be Tim or I. It's around your mom. Somebody's got to take the responsibility to monitor what's going on there. The planning staff, quietly but effectively, to know if something's coming down the pipe, to pull the trigger on the TIF district. So you need to lay the plans in place first. So I'm not sure about laying this over.
May I just address portion of what you're saying. And as you're well aware, on the other side of the street, 27th Street,
they're in trouble.
The parties that are responsible for the TIF district and the management of it is their community development. I had brought that to the attention of the council some time back, but it was decided that the CDA should only have jurisdiction of TIF number 2 as was proposed, and that the CDA should remember would remain a recommending body. So just point that out. Alderman Olson.
I'll respectfully disagree. There was a motion ages ago by this council that authorized and turned over the authority to the CDA. Now, there was more action needed to be happened, but that, like this thing for May, never happened. So it's waiting for someone to come back with a resolution that says the CDA is now responsible for 3 and 4.
I'll let the city attorney pick it up, but the motion is actually in your packet, and we examined the motion at great length to determine what the motion said.
It wasn't the last agenda.
City attorney.
That was followed up on, and that was in consultation with Carlos and Brady. Hours been a long time. Tax incremental financing consult to the city on a legal basis. And the bottom line was areas have to be declared blighted across the board as the only method of charging the CDA with full authority versus just planning according to the statute. So that's where it's at. Number two, I will remind the county.
Alderman Olson.
Okay.
see, being that I'm leaving, I can be a little less diplomatic. I know, Mr. Mayor, that you have...
Wait, I got to get over the shock.
I know, Mr. Mayor, you have heartburn over over declaring blight around current existing buildings.
Nope.
But you know what? It's a matter of properly administering districts and statutes. And if we want to do this right and get it off of this body's table and put it where it belongs with the CBA, we'll go ahead and do the declaration. So that brings me to my question, Mr. Mayor, which is not diplomatic. Why the hell isn't a document to do that on our plate in front of us months ago?
Mr. City Attorney.
Because I don't know that anybody was specifically charged with that, and I can tell you that the executive director of the CBA for a good number of months, while we remained very civil with Oak Creek, was contesting Oak Creek to the tune of 250 to 220 hours per month. And that's just one chunk of time consumption. So, did get her done, and there's a backup.
Well, in fairness to you, if nobody told you to do it, why would you do it?
Well,
so, okay, thank you, Mr.
Well, anything further on that? Do we have a motion?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying
aye.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm not sure what this motion is.
Madam right. Clerk, could you please read back the motion?
It was to receive and place on file, and it was made by Alderman Taylor, seconded by Alderman Schmidt.
Meet you guys again.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, six ayes, no noes, ayes have the motion carried. Alderman Solomon.
I'll reiterate what Alderman Olson said. Can't let this baby drop.
Merry Christmas.
And I see some of the candidates are out there. We can't let this baby drop, because if somebody goes, there's 60 acres for sale on our property right across the street from the hospital.
Are you referring to item?
I'm referring to the last item that was on the agenda. Can't let this baby fall on its face. You're going to have somebody watching what's going on so you can capture that increment.
All due respect.
Because it won't be developed unless we capture that.
All due respect, Alderman. If I went and I had this on videotape, and the many times I brought this to the attention of the Common Council, I don't know if it would make 60 minutes, but I was pushing this issue for a couple of years. And it's here.
Is it?
All right, item five, item six, resolution to establish a collateralized bank accounts policy to authorize the use of a standby letter of credit issued by the Federal Home Loan Bank for bank account collateralization with U.S. Bank.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Item 7, ordinance to amend ordinance number 2012-2096, ordinance adopted 2013 budgets.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Thank you. I get a clean up. Alderman Wilbur.
I have a question for Ms. LaBerta.
Sure. Ms. LaBerta.
There weren't any funds in here that were encumbered that we moved over when we did Marquette. Remember, we did all that shifting around, and just want to make sure that those monies got included.
I believe they are appropriated directly.
Okay.
We could not encumber them under this anyway because there's no contracts in place. But they are, I believe, in
just want to make sure
13 budget.
And what is your what motion are you seeking or action?
To approve the encumbrances. Listed above for each of the funds.
Is there a motion to that effect?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Report from City Engineer. We did that. Item 9, resolution awarding bid to lowest bidder for 36th Street sanitary sewer lining with West Missouri Avenue and West Madison Boulevard. Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, I'm prepared to move on this, as we've done this before, but Mr. Bennett, do you know if we can get any of the ditch work done, or is that strictly, we're not even going to talk about that now? I know it's not related, but there's there won't be any rework that would, crossover work that would be done if you're digging in one spot.
We're not going to dig.
Okay. So, well, remember I had to ask you about the typical request made by one person, and we've had a whole street full of people requesting that, so, okay.
No action required. Any other comments?
No, yeah.
Yeah.
More
bids.
Okay,
yeah,
I
motion
change.
To adopt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You want to sit in the
audience? Motion to adopt the resolution awarding a bid to the lowest bidder for South 36th Street, Sanitary Sewer Main lining from West Missouri Avenue to West Missouri Avenue.
Second.
There's a motion that's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Item G10, Planning Department 2012 Annual Report. Mr. Deal. I should ask you. Well, go ahead.
There would be no motion or action necessary for this one. It's just a summary of what the department did last year. I think the biggest thing to point out is the city is still recovering from the recession. Most of those types of applications that we track are below what it was before the recession, before 2007. There are three or four that have returned to those levels of activity. But one of the most important ones of all, subdivision plats, we still don't have any. I did look. Before 2007, we were averaging 5 or 10 a year. The one other thing I could mention is the things that change the least sometimes are surprising. Zoning compliances, tenant build-outs, businesses doing additions and expansions, those kinds of things, those types of projects didn't change during the recession. Those levels have stayed steady. But it's the special uses in the site plans that dropped.
I just have one comment which I brought up earlier, and that was the on page 115, it talks about the dates on the quarry monitoring. And I'm asking for mayoral support to direct staff to delegate time for the quarry monitoring contract that has been outstanding for quite some time.
Okay. Just on that, Ms. Filberta and I have had, several conversations about where this is, and Mr. Deal, and maybe you could just give us what you told me about where this is and what's the problem.
The information that I needed to look at the cost options and cost savings ideas, I made some changes and gave it to the applicant, to the consultant a couple weeks ago. The consultant wanted that information to make sure that what they're going to come back with is on the same page as what we were looking at. That included the recommendations from the quarry monitoring committee. So I gave that to the consultant a couple weeks ago.
Well,
they couldn't give me a definitive date of when they would get back to us, because they're going to give us a revised contract.
We have two consultants we're working with. We haven't even selected one yet. This council hasn't selected a consultant.
Staff had recommended which consultant to choose, and I believe the motions are that to allow us to talk to those consultants, to that consultant.
Only one now?
Standard.
I don't know how it got from 2-1 without the council approval.
That was the motion that we brought to the council to continue to
refine them, but we had two. We were talking, when we went to the quarry committee, we had two, and we were looking at both the consultants, and we said, take these back and see which one can.
And the quarry monitoring committee made a recommendation that they agreed Stantec was going to go with. That was a motion from the committee.
It didn't come to the council.
I don't believe it had to. We'd already taken that to the council the first time. The council directed us to take it to the quarry monitoring committee.
Well, I guess council doesn't care to be updated on those items.
It still
will
have to go to them.
If it's well, we are on the planning report, and it is that we have Corey monitoring. I would suggest to staff to bring back a kind of a history line chronology of events that have occurred, so that everybody's up to date. We've visited some history tonight on a number of things, and people see the history a little bit differently.
Revisionist.
Does that allow any direction for planning staff to kind of put a little fire underneath this? Because we started this back in, well, look at this document, it says March. We're going to come up on a whole year to hire one consultant. I'm hearing from my constituents, this city can't get anything done. And
well, I guess I have to address that. My understanding is that we put X amount of dollars in the budget, and the council basically said not to exceed, and the committee that worked on it, when they came back with the recommendations, in order to accomplish those tasks, exceeded the budget's limitations. So, I mean, that's, but I think a chronology would be good to bring back, and I'd like one of these done as soon as possible. Alderman Schmidt?
Yeah, well, it's my understanding, too, because having been on the Quality Monitoring Commission, we did make the recommendation to accept Stantec, and I believe that is where we took it back to Stantec now, said, okay, this is the budget that we have to work with, and what can you do to accommodate the work within that budget? And obviously, that's where the process stands right now.
Correct. Well, we did start with a report here, and I think if we're going to go any further and stay within the open meetings law, that bringing a chronology of events back as soon as possible would be a good idea. And then we can see, the whole council can see where we are. Alderman Olson.
I would rather have them get it done than give us a report. We don't need a report. Call these guys and say, move on, but sure, we're going to move to the next vendor. More staff time, write another report that we need.
Well, I would agree, but my understanding is that it's a little bit more complicated than that. At least that's what the planning managers informed me of past. Well, put it this way. I'll go with you. If you can get it done, get it done. If you can't, let us know.
There you go.
End of story.
Take that as a directive. All right. No motion is needed. Alderman Olson.
This is the last time Joe will provide a report that I will read like this. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Counting down.
You're going to hear this a few times.
It's kind of the last of everything. The last of this, last of that.
I'm waiting for like a poll.
Well, it's right, I'm putting that together.
All right. Well,
Countdown clock.
Item 11.
Exit movie.
Madam Clerk.
Actually, even though I do handle the noxious weeds, this is Mr. Roberta's. And I would say in one of his lines at the end, if it's not broke, don't fix it. It seems to work fine as is. And anything to accelerate the process that we can do internally, we will do if there are issues. But I think it was between Alderman Taylor and Mr. Huber.
Alderman Taylor.
Thank you.
Alderman Skronsky.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I recall, every year when we approve the weed commissioner, we have this discussion. And I'm looking at Alderman Olson because I have a feeling that he may agree with me on this one, that we've been in total agreement on this issue more than any other issue that's faced the city, because we all have in our district those violators that every year do nothing, to the point where the neighbors, after looking at it for a month, finally call up and say, can you do something? And even though the process moves kind of quick, the thing is, let's stop it from happening the first time. And so when you look at all the different options, I like option 5, which accelerates the current timeline, but I also do like option 6, which just says increase the fine. Let's have the fine be a substantial amount that we can be done with this, that they know not only are they going to pay for the service of them getting the lawn cut and the weeds cut, but on top of that, we're going to have them pay a fine, and it should be accelerated each and every time. I think it's the only way, and we each have a handful in our district that every single year, they're not going to touch our lawn. They're going to let it get as bad as possible, knowing that the city will come out and do it at a cost of like $70 or whatever it is, cheap. And on top of that, you have the same situation where we have a number of foreclosures in this city. The banks do not touch it until they get the call. And that right there is a complete pain in the you-know-what, because try to find out who the bank is first off, get a hold of somebody, get some type of action. I remember one time where a bank was contacted, and what happened? They came out when the weeds were probably up to here, and they did one level around the perimeter of the property, and that was it. And then it took another week and a half for them to come out there and actually do the whole thing, because, what, that wasn't good enough? Are you kidding me? So I understand that I'm hearing, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The reality is, we get the calls. It's the same offenders. This is one way you would hope that it will prevent it from happening, because you're hitting them in the pocketbook in the beginning. So I would like it to be, I'll make a motion to go with item 5, which is accelerate the current timeline, which it looks like the clerk would agree to, and an increase in the administrative fee, which, hey, I'm okay with that also. So do you want to have the fee raised? Let's go with 5, 2, and let's go with also item 6, which raises our municipal code violation from a minimum to what looks like $50, which turns it into a $114 fine. That would be my motion with those three things.
City attorney?
Only that.
Because this is ridiculous.
Second for discussion.
All right, go ahead.
Only that when I took a look at this a few weeks ago, I kind of listened to everybody. Didn't have to listen to everybody because I knew what everybody would say. Looked at Mr. Roberta's correspondence and thought, okay, code covers this. Don't need to amend the code to set a fine. Actually, my response email to him was, why don't we just send in a newsletter to that staff based on comments and council meetings at the time. It's going to do a first offense, 300, second offense, 600. I had to take the cost into consideration anyway. Took a look at the municipal code. Maybe make whatever minor changes in the timeline lines or whatever as of number 5, and then just in the newsletter, staff can inform the public that first offense within a year would be $150 plus court costs, which are 90 for a total of 240. Second offense would be double that, 300 plus court costs, which would be 129 for a total of 429. And second and subsequent offenses have to take a look if corporate defendants such as banks or so that's just an informal without code amendments and see how it works, because we're hearing that it's not broke, so don't fix it.
Okay.
Come back next year and see. Because somebody's going to have to testify in the municipal court, and the weed commissioner that did not confer with the weed commissioner, but the weed commissioner gets paid for cutting weeds, and ultimately, on a trial basis, it'll be subpoenaing, if necessary, commissioners show up on a Wednesday morning or a Wednesday night on top of cutting weeds.
Alderman Taylor, you have the floor.
Well, I mean, I want to hear it from Alderman Olson. Something has to be done. I think that's the point. And it is broken because we have the same offenders. So if what the city attorney is saying, we'll fix it, we'll solve it, I'm all for it. But the point is, it is broken because we have the same ones every year. That's not changing. And we know which ones are the repeat offenders. Do we just want to, come springtime, just send someone out there to mow it because we know we're going to get it? So, Alderman Olson, it's all yours.
Alderman Skronsky is next.
No, I don't have a problem with my district. It's ridiculous. I'd file this.
Tim and I couldn't leave without having this conversation. Right?
It's a problem.
You couldn't wait until the end of April, could you?
The system is not broken, but the motivation still is present for those who are our habitual violators to have the city stay in the lawn and garden business because our fees are too freaking low. And I've been arguing about this since 1998. We ought not take low bid for the weed commission. We ought to take high bid. Make it expensive for those who choose to have the city do their landscaping for them so that the next year they'll think twice about it. But I'm all for what the city attorney has to say. I'd like to see the timeline accelerated, fine schedule, and I would like to see you guys. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to bid quick. Yeah, I'm going to get the vote on this. I'd like to see us take the high bid on the community commissioner. So I'm going to withdraw my second and wait for the motion from Alderman Taylor.
The second has been withdrawn. Make the motion. So you were the main kind of motion.
Yeah. I'll withdraw the motion.
Okay. Alderman Wilhelm says.
Well.
And Alderman Schmidt.
This is probably something that has not been thought about. And I had a resident in my district that had a heart attack, couldn't get out to mow the lawn, and was in the hospital for an entire month during the biggest part of the growing season. Came home, ended up back in the hospital. Again, missed the second part. I understand what the intent is here, but people that are already struggling are going to take the brunt of some of this. If we have a list of repeat offenders, I would be interested in seeing the list of repeat offenders in my district. I'm not aware of any. Maybe it's just because the process is handled so well that I don't know about them. But I'm going to give another point of view on this. From an ecological point of view, moving the timeline up doesn't really make any sense because if you ever heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers, it's wet. It's wet and it's difficult to get out there. And what happens when you cut plants ahead of time in their growing season is they multiply their flowering heads. So you're going to increase your weed seed bank by doing this, which is going to cause your weed problem to explode even worse than it is now. Now, I know that most of you don't really understand the concept of that, but if you think about plants where they tell you to remove the flower heads and pinch them off because then they'll bloom like you do with, you know, tomatoes or whatever, you have multiple blooms, that's what you're actually encouraging to happen here. So I wouldn't encourage moving it up any closer. Of course, I wouldn't encourage causing ruts in people's property with the wet ground, for one aspect of it. I'm not really ready to punish people that have legitimate reasons for not being able to get their lawns mowed. But I can definitely see the repeat offending issue. So with those thought in mind, I hope the city attorney could come up with another solution that's not going to punish people that are really trying to do the right thing but are unable to do the right thing. And maybe the simple thing is just increasing the fees. And I sort of like the, if it's not broke, don't fix it, because I think it works really well. I had probably one of the worst offenders in my district because I had the house where the people went to jail for the marijuana.
Yeah, but that was
the
inside, right?
Yeah, inside. Yeah. Big difference.
And they were doing a lot of flower pinching on the tops on those. So the city clerk was able to locate, you know, the bank, and that was challenging. It was, and she was able to do that, and they did, and they came out and took care of it. So once we were able to locate the owner, the process worked just fine. So I hope that the city attorney might be able to come up with another solution based on that input.
I was in that house, and there was more grass on the inside. Mr. City Attorney, Alderman Schmidt, and then Alderman Skaransko, City Attorney.
I'll need another idea, because that, as with enforcement to enforce the municipal code actions, there is discretion. Missing, not being able to cut weeds due to circumstances outside of your control.
Alderman Schmidt, Alderman Skaronski, Alderman Taylor, Alderman Solomon, and Madam Clerk.
So I think part of the, I was afraid this was going to happen because there are so many options available to us. I think there seems to be a general consensus, at least with option two, to have the current practice of increase the administrative fees, which we can call it the problem. And I was in support of basically of other option four for repeat offenders. I'm afraid, too, if we go to the other extreme, of I don't want to see too many people lining up in this court over grass.
So, prevent someone's punished for violating the law.
For fines without changing the ordinance.
Alderman Skaronski, Alderman Taylor, Alderman Solomon, Madam Clerk.
We're having a round robin here. I prefer the KISS method and let the city attorney do what he said he would do and get it over and done with and get this thing off the table. We're wasting a lot of time on that.
Well, and Taylor?
I don't think this is a waste of time. Thanks,
Solomon.
Because this has been a constant discussion every year. So obviously there's a problem here. I would agree that what the city attorney recommended as a way of doing this is probably the best option, you know. I find it funny that every year, whether it's wet out or not, I mow my lawn. And my neighbors mow their lawn. And probably about 99% of the city mows their lawn. Yet for some reason, we're now saying that, well, because it's wet, we can't mow our lawns. That's not a good enough answer. We know we have offenders out there. That, you know, we have. What about the people that have to look at it? What about the people that have their homes for sale while this is going on? That's worried about their property value. Because that was, I get those calls too, because where I'm talking about where the biggest offender in my district is that three homes for sale, and they're saying, are you going to do something about this? Because it's affecting my sale of my home. So I think the alternative that the city attorney brought forward, which will, you know, have an increase, put a letter in the newsletter saying, this is what we're going to do. Here's going to be the fine. If you want to increase the administrative cost, I'm fine with that. And if, yes, you have example of someone having a heart attack and not being able to mow their lawn, and they can't have their grandson who is 18 years old mow the lawn or whatever, well, then that's when they show up to court, they can say, this is what happened. I think we have a pretty reasonable judge that can look at the big picture. But when you're every single year, you can look at your history and you see you're here 2-3 times a year that we're mowing it, saying that I just couldn't get to it isn't going to fly anymore. I think that's what we're doing here.
Alderman Solomon, Madam Clerk.
I would concur with that. Get the administrative fee up at least $25, because when they got to go try and find somebody, and the bank happens to be in Eger Prairie Grass, that takes little digging.
We found them. We got them.
Yeah, I realize that, but you got them for what, $15? Whoop-de-doo-doo. The scenario here is that get the fines where they belong. There should be a lower fee for the first one. And third, second one go up. The third one, put it through the roof. Kind of simple.
Madam Clerk.
Takes care of the repeat offenders and gets us out of the lawn business.
Right. Yeah. Madam Clerk.
I have two real quick things. One is I believe the code still allows for aldermen to appoint themselves weed commissioners of their own district. And
I'm referring to all the
that might be an option for some of you. And the other thing is last year we started something which, if you compared last year to the year before, we used to mail certified letters only, and people got smart and decided not to sign for them, and we kept having to start a clock over. And last year we decided we're sending a certified and a regular. The certified came back and the regular didn't. They got it. And, you know, I can make spreadsheets and charts if you want, but I really don't have time for something like that. But I can assure you that we don't have as many repeat offenders as everybody. Maybe one district does, but not every district does, as Alderman Skaronski testified.
He's
to.
In the country. Nobody knows.
Yeah, and I got horses, cows.
Good goats.
Yeah, right.
I had
some district.
Alderman Wilhelm, you're on the floor.
Yourselves.
Well, I'd like to make the point that the weight of the equipment on a tractor versus the weight of a personal lawnmower is quite a different when it comes to rutting up
these property. People don't care, Kristen.
I'm
they will help you on the floor.
I'm making the point where I was told that it's not too wet. There's no condition too wet, because if we can mow our lawns, then everybody else, then they should be able to do it too. But I'm talking about weight equipment. You don't want to send a big tractor trailer out on someone's lawn to cut it and have it rutting up their property. So I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. So he does have more substantial equipment than the usual lawnmower in some cases, so you have to be careful of that. So I know it's a big joke. We have some really rude behavior going on up here in New York.
I've said twice, and I've actually been thinking about something, but I'm not going to say it. I guess I will say it. Alderman Wilhelm represents over 5,000 people. It should not be Kristen. It should be Alderman Wilhelm. If respect the number of people that she has as an alderman. This is not a union hall. It's not a bar. People expect the people on this council to perform in a respectful manner. I think that's what the alderman is asking for, and I think that's what she's entitled to. Mr.
I guess I'm unclear on where we're headed with the motion at this point.
The city attorney, we recommend it.
Mr. LeBert?
One item that hasn't been discussed, and I think it was part of the genesis for the clerk's recommendation, is in the discussion I had with the clerk following my discussion with Alderman Taylor, one of the primary concerns you ended up mentioning to me, Alderman Taylor, was that we don't get to that first mowing picking up when it's in that spring. That can be addressed by the clerk already, without any action board, moving up the appointment process so that the week commissioners moving quicker. I think one reason the clerk made the recommendation that she has, and I can support, is the fact that all the other steps where we pursue enforcement do two things: add extra work to the clerk's office and extra work to the city attorney's office. And so that's the problem where I would be cautious moving forward with pushing the citation aspect, because although that may get fewer people off, once she goes through the process of getting the weed commissioner done, it's a very routine process, and the weed commissioner has most of the work, and that work is compensated for. And the clerk's role is pretty straightforward, routine, and not cumbersome. Adding the citation step is going to increase her workload, increase the municipal attorney's workload to get somebody off the list that really isn't bothering us. I think we can look at that administrative fee, and she can already, within the code, move that appointment time up so we can avoid long grass in the spring for the first one. And the ordinance already has the ability for her first citation to be issued. If it turns out as we get into the spring we have someone who's problematic or someone who's a repeat offender,
nuisance,
we can already issue a citation with nothing having to be done. So we can sort of cherry-pick the problematic ones if we need to without any change to the ordinance. So I guess, given the workload issues which hadn't been discussed, I would suggest the only thing to be direction to have is bring back an administrative fee, maybe about as high as we can legally make it, because there are legal parameters to what we can do. But that work I can do for the clerk's office and a quick ordinance to amend that. And then she can bring it in. We can address the spring issue. And we can do ordinances as necessary for special circumstances.
Alderman Taylor?
I'll make a motion to item option two, which is for the clerk to increase the administrative fee. Along with that, item five, which is increase the current timeline, which will allow us to do what Mr. LeBert has said. But I will, right now, Madam Clerk, when I get that call from 36 and Crest, I better not get that call from 36 and Crest. because every year it's 36 and Crest. That house is the first one, and it is a nightmare to deal with. So I do not expect to get an email from one of my constituents. I can give you the names that I receive every single year from the four people, because obviously if what we do works, I won't get that call. I don't want that call. I don't want that email this year, or else I will bring in all this again on a future agenda, because this is... No, I'm just making a point that I'm hearing that this is not broken, and I'm saying that's BS, because every year we get some of these calls. Same ones. That's one that sticks out.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Any further discussion, Alderman Wilhelm?
I just need clarification on what it's meant by moving the timeline.
Ms. LeVert has explained it.
The clerk's office traditionally brings the appointment of the
weed
commissioner and the publication of the in mid-May, and we can move that up earlier in the statute.
Well, I think there's a reason for that movement.
Madam Clerk?
I just want to clarify that the weed commissioner is not my appointment. The weed commissioner is the mayor's appointment. So I receive the bids, and I present them to the mayor. And the mayor puts them on there. I don't want somebody to think I have the authority to make the appointment.
And then obviously, is there a mechanism?
Alderman Wilhelm said that she had not relinquished the floor. So
So the procedure is we're going to let the department determine the nuisance, just like we do with everything else. Is that what I'm hearing? If we determine that this is being done too much and they're using the city services too much, then the staff has the ability to determine them a nuisance under the nuisance ordinance and take it to court that way. That's what we have in place for every other department. They can make a determination on it if it's a nuisance based on overabundance of staff service. And
Mr. Liberta?
The answer is yes, but we do, among staff, since we've never issued an actual citation for this topic, among staff, we will have to work out the administrative process to make sure the right person is issuing the, but the code provides for a citation to be issued.
City attorney?
No, the answer is no.
No.
It's not whether or not it's a nuisance under code. It's whether or not you have violated the noxious weed ordinance. In other words, if you're in a platted subdivision and your grass is higher than 6 inches, you have violated the code.
I was talking about under multiple.
Doesn't matter.
All right. I think we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded and commented on.
Right. And I said one question. So is there, can the clerk then also issue a citation under their current rules if, for that? Then I think then the direction is that we strongly encourage the clerk to cite people when they are repeat offenders. And by that I mean if they were on last year's list and they do it this year, that's good enough to be a repeat offender.
No.
All
right, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded under discussion, and now I'm forced to comment because this is like, I don't know how many conversations I've sat through on this weed commissioner thing since I was an alderman, but it's a lot. It's like the most hours ever spent. I think we had although this is way below one of them, it was like 4 or 5 hours. The city attorney.
Only that I thought about all of this whenever I sent the correspondence, and I think it was after a council meeting one night. And I thought about, I don't recall the clerk's office issuing citations for anything, so only because of the last comment, I don't know that that's going to happen. The next day I talked to the assistant city attorney. While it's not done often, my thought was perhaps weed commissioner notices city attorney's office as a repeater, and the assistant already has a form issued to the citation, and it gets mailed.
That's
the problem. So, and that's not decided yet, but it's going to be the easiest way and not necessarily clerk's office issues.
Okay. Try it again. Motion on the floor has been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Point of order, the clerk please read back the motion.
Alderman Taylor moved to proceed with option 2 and option 5 in the council action sheet and strongly encouraged the clerk to, at the time you said it, was to issue citations. We'll reword that to staff.
Yeah.
Is that the motion?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Six ayes. No noes. Ayes have it. Motion carried.
Can you mark as unanimous, Your Honor?
I don't. I'm sorry, what?
Can you mark it as unanimous?
There's a request to, if there's no objection, to record the vote as unanimous. Seeing no objection, please record the vote as unanimous.
Thank you.
Item H1, Alderman Solomon.
For appearance, unanimous. Approve the letter straightly. Approve, fuller approve, Walgreen change of agent. Approve, St. Martin's of Tours Church.
Approve. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Item I-1, list of vouchers dated February 5th, 2013. Numbers 145908 through 146107. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm. Aye. Alderman
Solomon.
Alderman Olson.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. You now have the net payroll dated January 25th, 2013 in front of you. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Olson.
Aye.
Alderman Solomon.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Is there a motion to adjourn?
No.
Not yet.
No. Madam Clerk.
There's a voucher from the last council meeting. Skronsky had a question.
Yes, I did.
Ballasters.
Yeah.
Alderman Skronsky.
I couldn't believe that there's two trips on here to change a ballast and a light fixture. And a ballast is what operates that light fixture. And they need two trips to get it done. What the hell's going on? Can any of our personnel change a ballast and a switch in this vast city of mechanics? Do we have to pay $900 to change these? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, if we got that much to blow on this, somebody needs their head examined. I mean, everybody's doing stuff. We got mechanics in the building and everything else. We got custodians. You can't change a light switch. There's three wires to change that.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
And two screws.
Yeah. So I think in the future, somebody's got to watch what the hell they're doing at that.
Just a comment. Could you check to see whether that is an item that came up through collective bargaining, or that would be an invasion of the bargaining units by the electricians? What I was explaining to some earlier today is that I saw many grievances in the past regarding electrical workers, trade workers getting involved and saying that custodians were invading the bargaining unit by doing their work. So, well, this is a lot of things are past practice and carried over.
Yeah, I check
it. In the city hall, we do change our own ballots, and in the police department. But the maintenance staff has been cut, and so maintenance staff doesn't do maintenance in the fire department. They help them some, but they don't do the cleaning there. They don't do the maintenance there.
Well, I know that.
So
I know that
in
many departments, employees went out and started doing their power saws and their drills and started doing cement work and things like that. And trades union, Lyle Ballastery, et cetera, came down with a hammer, so to speak, on all of the employees that were getting their bargaining. So can you check that out? Alderman Taylor, or Alderman...
What? Do I
Alderman
look that
Skronsky?
Bad? You're calling me here?
You're getting younger, Ken.
Okay, thanks much. You're all right. No, I just think because if we're running a city, we have custodians... And for menial tasks of this nature, to do this stuff, I don't see any why. We don't have, and I may disagree with the mayor on this stuff, but let's check it out. Let's see where we're at. Because pretty soon we're going to have things to change the toilet paper rolls around here. And I think that's ridiculous. But, I just can't believe this here.
Alderman Solomon.
I agree with Mr. Skronsky. However, in this case, it appears that the bill needs to be paid, so I'll approve the voucher for this.
And is there a second?
Second.
Good. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Yeah.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm. Alderman Solomon. Alderman Olson.
Six ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Your motion to adjourn. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.